I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. I'm John, he's Patrick. Together we're the functional nerds. Together we're the functional nerds.
And John, after such a profound spiritual journey that was like 20 years ago, I have never repeated what the mountain guru said to me. And do you know why I've never repeated it?
Why not?
Because I don't speak Hindi.
Oh, well, that would, you probably wouldn't understand what they're saying.
Exactly.
Well, it's good to talk to you today, Patrick. And it's good to have our guest on today, Tim Niederreiter. He's a fantasy and science fiction author and a podcaster. And we're happy to be joined by him today. Tim, thanks for joining us today.
Oh, it's great to be on the show, John. I'm a longtime listener of the Functional Nerds, so happy to be here.
Well, fantastic. And as I do what I do every week with our guests, and I ask them to pronounce their last name. And you have maybe the best name for an author that there is. That's Niederreiter, or close to it. So yes, very, very apropos name for what you do. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you have out there right now in the world of books?
Okay, so I have two series that are currently running. They're both kind of novella series that I'm doing on Amazon exclusively. One of them, the older one, which I just recently relaunched, is called The Root Conspiracy. And that's kind of, it's hard to categorize, which is kind of why I had to relaunch it. But it's a post-apocalyptic thriller series with a lot of strange kind of cyberpunk elements that aren't immediately obvious at first, which is another issue with marketing that series. But it is a very thoughtful series, I've got to say. It's actually kind of closer to some of the traditional, to the, you know, Asimov classic science fiction, except for the fact that none of the science would ever be possible, probably. And then the other series is the one that I just launched the first book of on the 1st of August. And that was the Spells of the Curtain, and that's a high fantasy series. It's much simpler to explain that one to people. A young mage graduates from his wizard's college, basically, and he sets out to serve his empire in this kind of Cold War climate in this secondary world. So the mages are kind of like the scientists at the end of World War II. That was the original idea that I had. So they're being snapped up and used by different sides of this conflict that's brewing.
Nice. And how do you now? What would be the best way for people to go about checking these books out?
Oh yeah, it's definitely go to search up Court Mage on Amazon. That's basically what you'll find me, and my book is that's the entry point to the new series.
And now, are these just ebook or are they print as well?
Currently, they are ebook only. I'm going to do some collections once I have some more stuff because they're relatively short. Mm-hmm. I think Court Mage runs about 150 pages, but
okay,
the
cool
books actually get shorter as they go on, which is kind of the opposite
nice
of most fantasy series. They're going to get a little bit shorter, not a whole lot.
Well, and I definitely want to save that conversation for a little later when we get to the main part of the show in terms of novel length or just, you know, length for media in general these days, because I think that's an interesting thing to talk about. So I definitely want to get into that later. Also, I want to point out too, you know, it's interesting because we recently had Andy Weir on the show, and I don't know if it really came up in the conversation with him because I'm sure he's sick of talking about it, so I may not have brought it up. But as people may or may not know with Andy Weir, you know, The Martian, obviously tremendous phenomenon success in terms of a book, but he put that out like just on his blog, where I think he sort of published it as a serial, if I'm correct. So I think there's so many good examples of authors putting their work out there independently and building an audience. And now is your goal to stay independent? Would you like to get published traditionally? Where are you kind of at with all of that sort of thing?
Well, my ambition is definitely just to be as independent as possible, though I do have this other novella that I'm editing to querytor.com as we record this. So, but the query will be out before we actually, before the show is. And that's a lit FPS book. So it's kind of what if you were trapped in a first-person shooter and the whole first-person shooter was real? Nice. But that, and I'm not sure if that's even a great idea to send to Tor, but I have another publisher in mind for it as well. So hybrid is interesting to me, but I would not want to give up publishing independently at this point.
Cool. Very good. Well, that sounds great. Now, before we get on to our next section of the show, I want to take a moment to thank everybody who is backing the show, and people back the show over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. For all the people that are backing us for $1 a month or even more, we're greatly appreciative of that. And for people who listen to the show but don't back us, consider becoming one of our backers. Just go to patreon.com/functionalnerds. Now, let's get on to our picks of the week.
Picks of the week.
Tim, why don't you go first and let us know what your pick of the week is?
All right, my pick is music album. I don't know what EP stands for, but that's what it is. It's by the band
Extended Play.
Extended Play. Okay, so it's by the band Epica, this kind of goth metal act, and it's called Epica versus Attack on Titan songs. So there's this anime called Attack on Titan. You may have heard of it, depending on who your guests and stuff. It's a very
Django Wexler told us all about it.
Yes, and that show has some excellent music. I'm not actually that partial to the actual show, but I love the music in that show. It's got a lot of operatic kind of stuff in the opening themes. And this is a metal band, basically a goth metal band, covering the songs from that show, some of the more iconic songs from that series.
Very cool. And do you like that show? Do you like Attack on Titan?
Well, I don't want to get stoned to death, so I think it's okay. I really
still haven't watched it.
Yeah, I really liked the first 8 episodes, and then it just kind of, the next 2 did not do it for me, and I kind of jumped ship.
a lot of people, including Django, talk about it as sort of a gateway for some of the newer anime.
Mm.
Which seems
like it's something that most people can get into.
It seems odd, though. I have not watched it, but if I'm not incorrect, isn't it about giants eating people?
It's about
skinless giants, John.
Skinless. Right. Giants. That doesn't seem to be that. That doesn't sound like a gateway to get people involved in anime.
Well,
that
it's actually
similar.
About people flying around killing giants. They're Spider-Man type gear, and vibrating swords that they kill giants with. That's what the show is, or at least that's what I thought the show was going to be about. Turned out it was about something else, which is one of the reasons I stopped listening or stopped watching it. But it is just. But the music, again, the music's great. That's why I would endorse this EP. I'm a big fan of the band in the first place, the Epica. But they do a great job arranging these songs and doing. And all the lyrics are different because, of course, all the lyrics are originally in Japanese, pretty much. So they actually changed the meaning quite a bit, I think, behind the songs.
Are they singing? Are they singing in English on this?
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Okay, because they're not America, they're from Europe, Epica. But I'm trying to
think
where.
Yeah, they are. But most metal bands from Europe sing in English. At least
yes. No, I was going to say, when you mentioned Epica, I'm like, you're speaking my language, Tim. Like, this is all in my wheelhouse of the bands that I like these days. Epica is very good. And I would recommend people, just go fall down a YouTube rat hole. Just search Epica. I think they're on Nuclear Blast, I think, is the name of their record label, if I'm not wrong about that. But it's very good, very melodic. If you like Nightwish, that's another band that's been around for quite a long time. It's a similar kind of thing where it's like metal with classical music, and you have like the female kind of operatic vocals. It's very good. There's a lot of good bands like that, but Epica is definitely one of them. And getting to talking about the anime a little bit, it's very interesting with anime because there's so much of it. This is what comes up anytime someone picks an anime. There's so much out there. And I think Patrick and I are kind of in the same boat where we liked the sort of old school early 80s anime that they showed on TV. But our consumption of anime since then is very limited. And one of the reasons why is there's so much of it. It's like, where do you even start? And so consequently, we don't start at all.
Yeah.
Like that's what it, do you watch a lot of anime in general, Tim?
Well, I don't watch a lot of anything in general, but a lot of what I watch is anime. Yeah.
Okay.
I do. I enjoy anime, especially the fantasy and science fiction kind, because really anime is just a form. That's why it's, so I'm not interested in a lot of anime. I'm interested in a lot of the anime that I, you know, in the genres I like.
I like the only anime that I watch is, I don't even know if it's considered anime. I like the new American anime. It's like, I really love the Voltron that's running on, and I like Avatar The Last Airbender, and I like that sort of Americanized interpretation of it, which I'm sure if someone who's like super deep into anime may turn their nose up.
By no means.
Yeah, they basically just blocked you on Facebook.
I know. I've just now lost 100 Twitter followers just by making... No, this is not a hit against what is considered good anime. It's just, I guess the American made one just speaks to me more. It's maybe easier to get on board with. And I just really like it. And I know there's with the Voltron, I think another season of Voltron just come out. I feel like I just finished the last season like a couple weeks ago. Now there's another season of that coming out, and that's excellent. And I think there's a new one coming out that I don't remember the name of, but it's also from some of the makers of Avatar The Last Airbender. There's a new Netflix series coming out. And then Castlevania, the second season of that is coming out in the next couple of months as well, which I enjoyed that too. That was only like 4 episodes, the first season that was on Netflix, but that's very good. I really liked Castlevania as well. Much more adult though, like very violent. Yeah. Like Voltron, your kids can watch. Castlevania, do not have your kids watch Castlevania. That's pretty dark and pretty violent, so I would not recommend that one.
Well, if you like that Castlevania anime, I must recommend Vampire Hunter D: Bloodlust. It's a movie, but it's like a mid-2000s, early 2000s anime movie. Very well
I've seen that.
I think I saw that back when it was released. I feel like I did watch.
Well, there was
that
an earlier movie that was just Vampire Hunter D.
Okay, so maybe that's the one.
The Bloodlust is more is like a new take on that kind of stuff.
Sweet, I will check that out then. Cool, Patrick. What's your pick this week?
My pick is going to be a DC animated movie called Batman and Harley Quinn.
So you write about this in your new column, Streaming Consciousness. Is that what you're calling it?
Yes.
Yes, I'm trying to be out there plugging it. I think I retweeted that and stuff a couple times.
I appreciate it.
No problem.
Yeah, it's fun because, you know, I've just been trying to think of what can I blog about. And since I do watch some streaming shows and different things, and I just thought that that'd be a good way to do that. But yeah, Batman and Harley Quinn reunites Kevin Conroy and Lauren Lester as Batman and Robin, or actually Batman and Nightwing now. And they're on the trail of Poison Ivy and the Fluorinated Man or something like that. I forget what he's called. He's essentially a plant guy from another dimension. And they want to turn the entire human species into Swamp Things. They want to recreate the accident that created Swamp Thing on a planet-wide scale. And they need Harley Quinn to try to track down Poison Ivy. And Harley is played by Melissa Roche from Big Bang Theory. And she does a great job with the voice. And it's slightly more adult than normal, but it still seems to be set in the animated universe of Batman, the animated series, Superman, and then Justice League, because it's the same kind of characters and designs and continuity. And it was fun to go back to that. Not like I hate the new 52 shit that they're doing now. It's horrible. It looks terrible. The storylines are so badly watered down and just junk.
When you say the new 52, do you mean the comics or the animated movies?
The animated movies are based on the new 52 comics.
Okay.
So they've started telling the stories from the new 52 a little bit, and they've also taken some of the previous stories and now they're doing them in the animated style of the new 52. So, you know, Superman has no neck. He's just 100% muscle. You know, and he's kind of a dick, and it's the Snyder almost take on him. And I just don't like those. I just don't like the animation style. Everybody is just so over the top and ridiculous looking. and the stories are terrible. So I just don't like that. So I like it when they go back to some of the more classic stories and they do them in a better animation style. In this case, they're doing it in the Batman the Animated Series style. So Harley isn't overly sexualized. You know, she's wearing the Harley Quinn outfit, the original outfit, that kind of stuff. But they do some more adult stuff. Like they imply heavily, even though they don't necessarily confirm it, but they imply heavily that when Harley kicks Nightwing's ass, she drags him into her apartment and ties him to the bed because she's trying to keep him so she can escape. And then instead they have sex.
Wow. That's a,
so stuff like that.
Yeah.
But they don't show it. They just kind of imply it, that it happened. And Batman figures it out 100% immediately. As soon as he finds them, he's just like looking around the room and he does his detective thing and he's looking at Robin or looking at Nightwing and Nightwing's blushing. So, yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, there you go. Yeah. I've seen a couple of those. Yeah, I've seen a couple of those DC animated movies. I'm kind of curious to watch.
Some are better than others. If it's one of the newer ones and you see that they are these ridiculously over-muscled caricatures of humans,
right?
That's not the one to watch.
Good to know.
Those are just terrible. Like they decided to redo the death of Superman in the new 52 style, and people are like, why? Why are you doing this again? There's already been probably 4 DC animated movies trying to tell the story of the death of Superman, and now they're doing another one.
Yeah. Tim, do you watch the DC animated stuff at all?
No, I don't. Well, I watched one of them last year. I think it was Son of the Bat. I don't know if that was part of the new series or the old one or the old style.
It's the new stuff. And it's
okay. I did not think that was super good. And I've watched some of the Batman the Animated Series. And was that the future version of that?
Batman Beyond,
yeah. But I'm not up to date on these movies.
Hmm. Cool. Yeah, I think since the last time we spoke, Patrick, I finally started in on the current seasons of the DC CW shows. Mm-hmm. So I watched the first 7 episodes of Arrow, Flash, and Legends.
Did you get to the Crisis episode?
No, well, that's what I'm doing. The order you're supposed to watch them is you watch the first 7 episodes of all 4 of those shows, and then you watch the 4 crossovers, then you can kind of finish them. So I'm just about to start on Supergirl. I have to say, out of all of them so far, I really enjoy Legends the most. That's my favorite one out of them. I really enjoy that one. But it's always good stuff. So anyway, I'm knee deep into that right now.
Cool.
My pick this week is a book, and it is by Justin Halpern. And if that name sounds familiar, a couple of years ago, probably almost 10 years ago now, he wrote a book called Shit My Dad Says, which many of you are probably familiar with that, even if you didn't read the book, because it started as a Twitter account. Tim, Patrick, do either of you remember the Shit My Dad Says?
Yeah, and I think they also tried to make a television series based on it.
Yes, they did, and it did not last very long.
No, it did not.
I was Shatner the dad? I feel like remember. Shatner was the dad on that. I'm not sure, but so I'm not picking that book. I'm picking his more recent book, which was from a couple of years ago, and the name of that book is called I Suck at Girls. For people who don't know about Shit My Dad Says, the author, Justin Halpern, he was dumped by his girlfriend and he moved back home with his dad, and he has like an older dad because he was the son from his dad's second marriage, and his dad is he's a doctor of nuclear medicine, so he's like this really smart guy, but he has salty language, let's put it at that. So that was the sort of basis for the Twitter account, was that he was living with his dad and his dad would just spool off all of these bits of advice, like laced with expletives. And it became a very popular Twitter account, and that landed him a book deal. But Justin Halpern is actually a very good writer, even though all this stuff is coming from his dad, he puts it together in a way that's very good. And so his most recent book is called I Suck at Girls, which is basically a lot of his dad's advice is sprinkled in throughout the book, but it talks about how terrible he's been with women his whole life. And he just kind of, from the time he's like a little kid, like pulling someone's pigtails in class in front of him, all the way up until his late 20s or what have you, he just talks about how he's bad with women. And each story is really funny and it's very well written. And it's a short book. It's not even 200 pages. So I think this was on sale for like $2. I think that's why I bought it a couple months ago. I'm not sure if it's still on sale, but it's very enjoyable. If you want something very lightweight and funny, and that's not going to take up a lot of your time, it's a great breezy read. I really enjoyed it. I like his writing a lot and he's very funny. So it's Justin Halpern and it's I Suck at Girls. So there you go. That is my pick. Tim, now we mentioned it earlier in the show, but we were going to talk a little bit about length of media and specifically in your case, talking about the length of your stories and how you tend to sort of settle in at the novella length. So talk a little bit about that. Why? Well, first of all, maybe you can even define the difference between a novella and a novel and a short story, and then why you tend to gravitate towards the novella form.
Sure. You know, the novella is generally, you know, it's considered between a short story and a novel. Basically, that's the simple way to put it. And it is, I think, according to the Hugo rules, I think they changed it recently because I thought it used to be it used to be 40,000 words or less was a novella. You know, if it's bigger than a short story, but less than 40,000 words, it's a novella. And that means the novella would range to be about 100, about 80 to 150 pages. But now they've expanded it so novellas can be as long as 50,000 words, according to the only place I've seen any official numbers. And anything longer than a novella, could be considered a novel. But New York publishers, a lot of them, like Bain, is another one that would only these publishers take, you know, 80 plus thousand words is their novel length. So it's a lot longer than the kind of books I write, which are usually between 25,000 and 40,000 words long.
Or if you're Brandon Sanderson, your novels are 500,000 words.
Yeah.
But that's within a novel too.
But actually that's interesting to me because Sanderson, I used to be a big listener of Writing Excuses and I've spoken to Sanderson once or twice over the years. And one of the things that I think is strange about him is that, not strange, but it's interesting to note that when he writes those giant books, at least the first few times he did it, he would write novellas and then combine them. Though I think in his case, it's more like he writes four novels and just puts them all in the same book, interspersed with each other.
Makes sense because he has multiple character points of view. And so, and depending on the world that he's writing, you know, he could spend time in one portion of the world and, you know, another section could be sort of about the other and they're sort of interspersed. But yeah, I could see that, how you could sort of write four concurrent novels or novellas and then jam them all and then have a nice 1200 page book.
Yeah, but Sanderson writes 12 novels at the same time, plus 33 novellas, 114 short stories, and then publishes them all.
I know anytime his name comes up, we always say this, but aren't you always shocked? Like, you know, if you're just, you know, browsing your blog feed or like Facebook or what have you, and it's, you see like, oh, you know, Brandon Sanderson's got this one's not a Cosmere novel, but it's another novel that he wrote. And it's like, what, when is he having time to write this? Mm-hmm. I when I used to go to cons, not that I've sworn them off, I just haven't gone in a long time. But when I was going to cons with a little bit of regularity, there were a couple of authors that I knew who were just like, he's got people writing for him. There's no way. And these were like name people too. Like they were just like, they're like, there's no way. There's no way he's writing that much in a year. There's no way.
Well, as somebody,
I don't know. I think he is.
No, I think he is too. Well, and go.
No, I was just gonna say, I think Tim and I even talked about this on his show, Rachel Aaron, right? If you can write 10,000 words a day, John, you can absolutely write all those books.
But my issue with the interesting thing about Sanderson, I was gonna say, is that he can't write 10,000 words in a day. He's physically not capable of doing it. Maybe he dictates now. I mean, that would probably allow him to do it. But he's not a great typist, and I remember him telling me he writes about 500 words per hour. So he has to work, even if he works 16 hours a day, he only gets 8,000 words. So that's,
yeah,
and I say only, that's still a lot of words.
Yeah.
But he does write a lot, and it's mostly through time commitment rather than writing quickly, basically.
Yeah, we had him on the show a while back, and I feel like the way his schedule was such where he had like sort of family time and time at the gym, and I think he sleeps pretty late, and I think he stays up pretty late. So I think he's got like these long chunks of writing time. We'll have like a 4-hour block here and a 4-hour block there. And so I think he's just got a very tight, very regimented schedule that he sticks to every day. And I think he's just probably insanely consistent. So it might not be an insane amount for one day, but I don't think he really ever takes a day off. I think he's just plugging away at it. And I think he uses his time wisely. So even if he's not writing, he's editing, or he's, you know, whatever, he's doing a pass on something. So he's always working. So, but why for you, Tim, you know, you were saying that the novella has kind of become your go-to form. Why do you think that is? What do you think it is about that length that has become comfortable for you?
Well, there's a couple of reasons, but one of the main ones is just the fact that I'm a pretty irregular writer. So I'm very much the opposite of Sanderson. I write quite quickly per hour, but I don't put enough hours in right now. I have a hard time doing that, even though it's kind of what I'm focusing on for the most part in my life. I have a number because unlike like just to use him as an example, Sanderson, he's a very regular kind of character, and you can hear him talk about this on YouTube. He does this. He says he's a very even keel person, and that carries through to his writing. It allows him to be very regular with how he writes and his schedule and everything. I have a bunch of various weird things going on with my brain from autism and stuff. And when you don't have regularity, you don't write that quickly. And I realized writing a 150,000 word book, and as I've written one of those, not only did it take me a whole year to write that book, but because it took so long, it really came out feeling like three books. And then I looked back in time to one of my earlier books. This is the one that the Spells of the Curtain series is based on. It was originally under a different name, and originally it was a single 110,000 word book, which I split into three, and I'm going to do sequels in the smaller format. Because I realized that book had stopping points, and the story is just kind of over, or it feels like it's over when you read it. that's what I'm told, and that's what I've noticed myself. Over the years, I noticed, okay, so how am I supposed to fix that? I looked at it, how am I supposed to fix this book being kind of three books? Well, the answer is to make it three books. And it's really not such a big deal when it was written basically that way in the first place. And I mean, it was written very much in that form where a story arc starts, it ends, starts again, ends, and then we go for a final arc, and that's the book. And it was very much the same way with that bigger book, the giant 150,000 word book that I'm still editing on the back burner. I consider 150,000 words to be giant. I know some people, obviously, we were talking about Brandon Sanderson, that's not that big for him. Though that book was all one point of view, so it does kind of become gigantic at that point. It feels much bigger to me because it's not split up. It's not a bunch of smaller stories. It's one giant story.
Now, you know, one of the things you mentioned earlier, you're saying you were an irregular writer. Mm-hmm. And I think if you're a person that's online in the science fiction and fantasy community, but particularly in the writing community, the bits of advice that you generally see thrown out is like write every day, write at the same time every day. And I think that works for a lot of people. But one of the things I wanted to bring up, I heard her on a podcast a while back. She's not a genre writer. Her name is Cheryl Strayed, I believe is how you pronounce her last name, Strayed. She's probably most well known for Wild is the name of one of her books, which was made into a movie with, I believe, Reese Witherspoon. Mm. It's kind of a big movie. Anyway, that was one of her books amongst many other books. And I heard her, I think it was on the Tim Ferriss podcast, and she was saying how her writing got a lot better and got more prolific when she accepted that she was a person that does not write every day. Because she used to beat herself up that she wasn't writing every day. So what she does, the sort of rhythm that she settled upon is that maybe once a month or so, which this seemed really bizarre to me, but hey, she's puts out like a book a year, so it works for her. She will, because she has kids and she's married and the whole deal, she's got a lot of responsibilities and a lot going on. She will rent a hotel room and go stay in a hotel room for like 3 or 4 days and just write for 3 or 4 days. Like, she'll get away from her kids. She'll get away from everything else. And she'll just, you know, write a tremendous amount in a very short period of time. So the point is that, well, yes, maybe writing every day works for a lot of people, but you may be somebody that writes in those big, you know, big blasts like that. Do you kind of write in that way? I mean, obviously, I don't know if you're going away to a hotel for 3 or 4 days.
I don't have that kind of funding at this point.
Yeah.
But I do tend to be a binge writer. I think that's something I embrace more. I've embraced more lately, but my most successful writing days were always days where there was a drought leading up to it. There was a period of time where I wasn't writing. For example, the first 10,000 words, actually 12,000 words of this book of Court Mage were all written in one day. So almost a third of the book was all written in one day after 30 days of not writing, because I was in a very intense month-long class at that point. And then I was done with it, and I'm just like, okay, I really want to write something. Because at this point, I'd already written several books. This was back in college. But I was really happy to finally get back to writing. So I said, I'm going to take a Saturday. And I had this idea, and I made sure I didn't write before that Saturday. You know, I just came up with ideas, and I didn't write any actual words for the book until that day, because that's when I'd planned. And then I just sat and wrote all day until, like, you know, from 4 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon, something like that.
Nice. Now, Patrick, how about you? Because I know a lot of you've spoken about how you'll go through periods where you bring your laptop out to lunch and you'll write a lot during your lunchtime. Is that kind of the way you're still doing it, or do you binge write sometimes too?
Still mostly at lunch.
That's
mostly at lunch.
That's the way it kind of works. Because I feel like you've told binge writing stories as well.
I have. Yeah. I haven't done that in a while. That hasn't, like, overtaken me in quite a while. But for the most part, I just sit at lunch, and usually with the noise and everything kind of going on, it becomes white noise and it helps me focus. Sometimes it sucks because it takes me a little while to get going. And then as soon as I start, really the words start flowing and everything's going great. My little alarm goes off and says, you've got 5 minutes to get back to the office. You have to leave now.
Yeah, that's the only problem when you work in, when you do that, when you have these little short windows of time, a lot of times you get going and then you have to leave right when you're getting going.
Yep.
But you got to work it in when you can. I'm just telling stories of when I used to go to cons, but this one con that I went to in Pittsburgh, I forget the author's name, but he talked a lot about how he had to write when he had like a big chunk of time, because he described it as in your mind, like getting to this deep place where, you know, the ideas were really coming and you can just really almost get kind of meditative about it. And if he didn't have, you know, at least like a 3 or 4 hour chunk, it didn't really work for him. He really needed that time. Unfortunately, I think with our modern society, I feel like most people don't have that 3 or 4 hour chunk to write at.
And depending on what you got going on, it can be worse.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. In particularly this summer, because everyone knows I'm a teacher, I have the summer off. I take care of my son most of that time, but when he's at his school right now, he has like half day of school. I've been practicing, and I'm focusing on playing the bass now, and I'm working on these walking bass lines and learning how to play like the Motown style bass. And so I'm really getting a lot of practice in, but even at that, I don't sit there for 4 hours. Like, I'll sit there for 20 minutes, work, then I'll get up, do something else for a little bit, then come back. So I sort of practice in 20 minute bursts, but then get back to it. And I find practicing your instrument's different than writing. I'm not creating anything. It's still mentally tough, but it's a different experience than when I would say writing songs or composing, where a lot of creating, and I bet you guys can chime in on this, is you spend a lot of time throwing ideas around in your head, and you may work on writing or creating whatever you're doing for 2 hours, and sometimes you'll not get anything.
Yeah.
Or sometimes it'll take an hour to kind of get to the because you've been thinking about it so intensely for that period, then you're like, ah, yes, this is what I need to do.
Well, and the thing is, though, John, when that happens in the past, I've beaten myself up and said, well, I didn't get anything done. I didn't accomplish anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, likewise.
But the truth is you did accomplish something.
Mm-hmm.
You have to allow yourself to do that setup, that research, that world building, whether it's in your head or on paper. You have to allow that to be part of the process and make sure that it counts. I think a lot of us get stuck and get caught up in the word count, like the daily word count thing.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are planning and plotting out your story, it's just going to make things easier in the coming days.
Mm-hmm.
So that has to count. You have to give yourself permission to do that stuff and not beat yourself up over it.
Yeah. I think with whether it's writing or practicing or setting up some kind of routine, that's something that I've become aware of recently too, because we can, let's say for a writer, you have like a word count goal. And I think that's a great thing to have, but sometimes you can become a little bit beholden to that word count goal and you're like, yeah, I hit it. But hitting it isn't always the most important thing, because sometimes it's a hollow victory if what you wrote wasn't that great. I think sometimes going through that process is how you get to good writing. But to kind of piggyback on what you just said, Patrick, sometimes you're better off sitting there walking around your room for 2 hours thinking about what you want to write. That's in the end more, even though you maybe have not written a single word, it's more productive towards your goal of writing a book than just knocking out 2,000 words and saying like, yeah, I did it, 2,000 words.
Yeah, headspace is important.
Yeah, so you, Tim, talk a little bit about that. What's your feelings on that?
I usually actually do write stuff down when I'm trying to, even when I'm not actually writing words for the book, I make notes. Like today I made a list of 10 different story ideas because I was having a hard time starting a story that is a sequel to one of my earlier stories. I'm like, okay, so there, all these things could happen. I know there's like one, there's only one element I need to include that has to be in this next story. So what can, it could be almost anything else, because it's, you know, these are shorter books. These are not, they, I don't have to worry too much about the idea being sustainable. I just have to worry about it maybe being too in depth. So I have to be careful about that if I want to write a shorter story, which is kind of the goal right now. But to get in the headspace, it does help. I mean, I make lists. I write stuff down on paper, and I don't count words I write on paper as words, because I don't, because then I have to type them up anyway. I'm not a great typist in the first place. So that takes almost as long to copy stuff as it would to write it fresh. And I think what you said is absolutely true for me. I mean, I have to spend so much time thinking about a story before I actually put the words down that putting the words down is actually the short part for me.
Hmm.
That's the quick fix is writing some words. And sometimes I have to do that. And sometimes I can do it without a prompt too. You know, sometimes I'm just, oh, the words were there. I wrote them. It was easy. But if they're not there, you can't write them. I mean, and that's not necessarily true for everyone. It's not even always true for me. You know, because sometimes I don't know the words are there. And so you have to try. That's important as well.
Yeah. Well, and I think particularly for genre, the ideas are extremely important, because what do many of us love about genre? We love the world building. We love the big ideas. And yes, you can arrive at those by just keep putting your butt in the chair and writing. But a lot of it is just thinking about it and whiteboarding it and brainstorming and all of that. So all that good stuff that we love about fantasy and science fiction, I think it's got to be given its due for it to sort of marinate in your brain to come up with this stuff. You know, not that I know anything about it. I did NaNoWriMo twice, and that's about the most writing that I've ever done. So that was 10 years ago, but you know, I've talked to a lot of people.
Yeah.
You've written
songs too, which is also sure in some ways.
Well, you spend a lot of time looking at the same two lines. And even though I haven't done a lot of songwriting recently, that's totally thinking. That's a totally different way of going about writing, because it's not, word count. It's you keep rewriting the same two lines of a verse over and over again until you get it just right. So it's a little bit different, but yeah, same idea. Same
but it goes to the fact that the proportions of a song are very contained. Even the yes. longest song is, you know, 20 minutes long, or I guess there's some that are longer, but you know, those are ridiculous songs to a lot of people. Most songs right. are less than 5 minutes, probably.
Oh yeah, but most pop songs are like 3 minutes or, right, exactly. or less. You know,
I'm just a big metalhead, so I tend to think of the longer stuff. But I for me, I'm like, yeah, a 20-minute song. Sometimes that's worth it. But
yeah.
But the thing about any scale, to get back to that for a second, is just it also doesn't have to limit the ideas you put into it. That's kind of what I wanted to say. You don't have to say, you know, for example, look at the work of Roger Zelazny. Are either of you familiar with Roger Zelazny?
I've heard of him.
Paul Weimer loves him.
I think someone Amber was telling me about him.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. Oh, come on. So his Amber books are very short. Yeah. Amber is his famous series, basically. And it is, these are 50,000-60,000 word books. And there's 10 of them, but 5 of them make a complete story in each set. And I think that's a good example of, because you don't need to have buildup for it to ridiculous cosmic power, if that's kind of just the backdrop. And that's kind of what that series is like. I mean, I definitely think it makes sense. Like, the ideas in that series are extremely big, but mostly it's action and adventure. So that's kind of
right.
As long as it's in the right form, in this form that people understand, you could do any idea, basically.
Well, and we've talked about it before. The acceptable range for what a novel is has fluctuated quite a bit. You know, back in the day, it was 50,000 words was considered, you know, a pretty bulky novel. And now they want around, for a debut author, they're looking for something around, you know, the 75,000 to 80,000 words. Epic fantasy can go closer to 100. And then, you know, once you've established yourself, you can do, you know, 500,000 word novels and call yourself Brandon Sanderson.
Yeah. Well, we are out of time. Tim, thanks for the great conversation today. Once again, you can check Tim out online. You could do a search for his book on Amazon, or you could follow him on Twitter and you get all sorts of information there. Tim, anything you want to leave our listeners with before we wrap it up today?
Well, I also do two podcasts. They're both at mentalcellarpublications.com, and that's Cellar with a C. So yeah, check those out. If you like the Functional Nerds, I think you might have find something you like over there.
Right. If Patrick was a recent guest, is that correct?
I'm not sure if his episode yes. will be up yet, but it will be out soon.
Okay. Okay. Well, so check it out. And then you can hear Patrick, and he probably talks smack about me the whole show. That was the entire show. That's yeah. what he does and, when I'm not around.
And yeah. And what was interesting is that, you know, Tim has a tight 30-minute show. And of course I pushed him to 40.
37.
Well, Tim, thank you for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. For us, once again, if you dig what we're doing, consider becoming one of our backers over at patreon.com/functionalnerds. Patrick, what do you want to leave our listeners with today?
Just go check out Tim's stuff and check out the show. I don't know when it'll go live, but we had a good conversation, so it's definitely worth your time.
Nice. All right, everyone, have a great week. We'll see you next time.
Smoke. I'd like to say thank you on behalf of the group and ourselves, and I hope we pass the audition.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Would you like a chili, baby?
I'm the one in the middle.